There may be two things there that you flip the light switch on. And one of them is shorter conversation right now, which is the kind of the inner dynamics of your own company. Because in true Malcolm Gladwell tipping point, the chapter on mavens, connectors, and salespeople, if you have a technology product that's being built, if you have an engineering product that's being built, it's being built by mavens. And that's a certain personality type. And salespeople are generally either evangelists, connectors, or connectors evangelists. And that's a different sales personality type. And the communication styles are very, very different. And so I think what the most critical thing there is culture and culture of respect.
Oh, such a good question.
Well, what do you come up with these questions? That's another great branding question.
That's a deep question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. It's Ben Baker. Welcome to another show, my wonderful audience. Thank you very much for tuning in every week. Thank you guys for your sharing. Thank you guys for subscribing. Thank you for your comments. You know, it is amazing the comments that I get each and every single week from people that are sitting there going, you know what, Ben, you got to get so-and-so on the audience. You got to get these people onto the show. And I'm listening. I truly am listening because you guys all have great ideas. And what I want to do is want to make sure that every single week we're talking about things that are relevant to you. So this week in that vein, I have Patrick Talley on the show, and we're going to talk about selling to innovators. So Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Appreciate the time. Kind of looking forward to this. It was a pleasure speaking with you earlier, kind of getting to know each other. And so the question you had asked me a moment or two ago about the innovator sector and kind of what goes on there and how is it unique and why is it so important when you look at an entire kind of adoption of a market. And when I think about the innovator sector, I look back on my career and I realized that the first 10 years or so, I didn't know that I was only selling to innovators. And I was constantly kind of migrating back to the early stage of even of the innovator sector. And what I found at about 10 years into my career with a couple of really exciting, fortuitous kind of rocket ship successes, an exit and then an IPO, and then another company that just became one of those companies written about in Forbes and Fortune. Actually, I think we were the first, or maybe not the first, but the most frequently front cover of Forbes and Fortune of any privately held software company up to that time. It's all pre.bomb. But what I found is the intellectual stimulation that goes on at the innovator sector, for me, exceeds the value and the kind of the juice, the joy around putting processes in place and scalability that you start to see as you move into early adopters and mainstream. So then stepping back after the second kind of huge success story that I was a part of, I said, okay, this is my joy. This is where I'm going to spend the rest of my life. And so for 39 years, I have always stayed in that innovator sector. And so when you only live in one sector, and if you look at an adoption curve, that innovator sector is a tiny, tiny portion of the market. So then I just did something really genius, if you will. And I took that adoption curve and dropped it on top of the innovator sector, kind of macro to micro, and said, okay, let's break up the innovator sector as if it's its own market. And let's take a look at the nuances and the personalities and the idiosyncrasies of the customers, the product solution, and then the company I'm either running or working for that are delivering to the market. Because if you do an adoption curve, a technology adoption curve, that bell-shaped curve over the innovator sector, you'll see that, yeah, we have these early stage innovators. Well, when we look at the whole curve, we never talk about early stage innovators. We glob them into a bucket called innovators. So I actually now talk when I'm speaking to people about super innovators, and that's the first 3 to 5 customers. So that's kind of going from whiteboard ideation to 3 to 5 customers that are actually paying. And I think that's a unique experience on the product, the company, the customer, and the sales and marketing and delivery side. Then kind of 4 to 12 to 15, somewhere in there, 16 to 30 to 35, 35 to 100, and then, you know, 100 to 150. Now you start to look at repeatable processes. But prior to that, and you know this because of your experience, prior to that, and certainly in the super innovator stage, there are no processes. You're trying like hell. but you don't have enough data points, right? You don't know what your customer acquisition cost is because you're begging these people just to answer the phones, right?
So, well, it's duct tape and Band-Aids at that stage.
It's exactly. And so is the product, by the way.
Absolutely. Right?
The product is barely limping along. And then you've got, you know, so when I talk about the inner dynamics of the company that's building and delivering a product, whether it's one that I run or one that I advise or one that I've just been a head of sales for, the rest of the employees hate the fact that the tip of the spear folks that are driving revenue are selling deals with hair all over them, right? Every deal's different. Every deal's got one more feature that has to be added. My gosh, I'm head of product development. I've got a full whiteboard. I've got a full project plan that's 18 months out. And now you want to add a purple whistle or a purple bell to this thing just to close the deal. And we on the sales side want to say, if we don't add that thing, we're never going to get it closed. Nobody's going to buy this stuff exactly as it is right now, right? It's not ready for prime time. Now, on the customer side, the joy for me is you generally have more pragmatic customers, right? They're going on the journey with you. They're helping you put the thing in place because nothing exists that's serving the function at that point. Now, talk about idiosyncrasies instead of kind of nuance. So those are nuances, if you will. An idiosyncrasy is that customer in the innovation whiteboard, the first 3 to 5 customers is generally being driven by someone on the technology side, right? And someone with a Maven personality who may or may not even know how to buy something within there. They may not have any responsibility to write a check within their company, but they've recognized the need. And they're going to beat you up when they face you because your product can't do the 5 things that they want it to do. By the way, 3 of them, they're the only person on the planet that want the product to do those things. So, you know, now you have to convince them that those 3 things may be important to them, but nobody else seems to care. Still buy my solution, right?
You've just given me like right through the fire hose. So let's back. No, that's fine because you know what? There's so much to unpack there. Before we go any further, let's take the time to unpack this because what we're talking about, as you just said, it's the tip of the spear. We're talking about innovation. We're talking about, you know, from the position of concept where you walked in the door one day and you had this aha moment to trying to get those first customers to actually buy in to the idea that you have. We're not talking about the early adopters. We're not talking about, you know, the people that are across the chasm that all of a sudden we're dealing with the mechanics and how do we scale the company. This is way before pre-scale. Yeah. This is down on your hands and knees at the stage of begging, say, listen, could you take a chance on me?
Yeah.
Could you take a chance on me so we can do it? So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the challenges because you intimated in some of these things where you have product engineers that all of a sudden said, they're going, yeah, okay, we're going to do this. And then all of a sudden sales comes up and says, wait a second here, we need this. Yeah. And it just blows the whole thing apart. So how do you keep all those balls in the air when you have a mission, vision, value that you're heading towards, and this is what you want as a goal, but you still have those unicorn customers who are saying, well, this is interesting, but what if it can do this? And how do you understand what are those customers that are worth paying attention to?
So which
are the ones that aren't?
There may be 2 things there that you flip the light switch on. And one of them is a shorter conversation right now, which is the kind of the inner dynamics of your own company. Because in true Malcolm Gladwell tipping point, the chapter on Mavens, connectors, and salespeople, if you have a technology product that's being built, if you have an engineering product that's being built, it's being built by Mavens. And that's a certain personality type. And salespeople are generally either evangelists, connectors, or connectors, evangelists. And that's a different sales personality type. And the communication styles are very, very different. And so I think the most critical thing there is culture and culture of respect. I quit counting a long time ago, but something like I think $500 million worth of technology solutions in my career. It's not that big a statement of brag. I've been around a long time, but I've never written a line of code. And so I would not have been able to take care of my children and my retirement and everything else if it weren't for really wonderful mavens who wrote code. So I respect them. And then, you know, I would also, you know, kind of make sure that they respected me and that I was an expert and a professional in what I was doing. It wasn't just saying, caving in and saying, we'll add these 5 things that makes their workload harder to get the deal done, right? It was belabored to get those concessions with the customer. Now, moving back. So you will notice in the next couple of minutes that I tend to oversimplify everything because my small brain only handles things in small digestible chunks. And so for me, it's all about kill it or close it, right? Am I involved in a conversation that's a conversation or is this a transaction? And one of the problems, and you've seen this, man, every startup company, every early stage company, oh my God, we've got a pipeline of 47 companies or want to buy from us. And I'm like, okay, well, how many have bought? Well, none yet, but 47 we're talking to on a weekly basis. And I say, look, you're doing something cool. You're a smart person with a big brain that's recognized a problem and built a solution or proposed a solution that solves a big problem. That's really cool. You're kind of like the guy or girl with the brand new, really cool sports car in the parking lot at the high school. Everyone wants to come out and stand around and talk about it. Those aren't the people we're looking for.
None of your friends can afford to buy that car that you have.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Your mom and dad actually bought that car for you.
No, exactly. And so what are we looking for? We're looking for someone that can actually either conduct a transaction or can drive us to a point of conducting a transaction with our help. And so how do we identify those people? And again, my oversimplification in the kill it or close it conversation of the super innovators is I'm looking for someone who's recognized the problem, recognized it's a big problem, tried to solve the problem themselves, recognize, holy hell, it's a bigger problem than I thought. I wish someone would come along and show me a solution, right? And then when you show up and say, I've got a partial solution to your problem, will you engage with me and we'll go on that journey together? So that's who you're looking for. They answer yes to those five questions.
And that end question is, will you go on that journey with me? Because it takes a certain type of company to have a leap of faith to sit there and say, this is an unproven solution. This is, I've got this problem. It's causing me pain. It's tearing my hair out. I don't know what to do with it. I've tried to fix it. I can't fix it. Here's a new solution. It's unproven.
Yeah.
You know, there's not even a proof of concept on this thing.
Right.
As we said before, it's duct tape and Band-Aids.
Yeah.
And the question is, there has to be that leap of faith by those super innovators to sit there and say, I'm willing to go on this journey with you. I'm willing to go through the pain of innovation with you to be able to make this product viable for me and also lucrative for you.
Yeah.
And there's that. That takes a special type of customer. So
it does.
My question to you is, how do you separate the wheat from the chaff? How do you go about, because, and we started the conversation before, how do you communicate, you know, those type of, with that type of empathy necessary to be able to get those innovators on board? I think it's probably the best way to ask that question.
Man, there's a lot in that question. So empathy is such a huge thing, especially in this part of the market, because you're going to fail them. Your product is going to fail them. And these are human beings that have put their faith in you. They put their professional, you know, credibility in you with their executive management, and then you're going to fail them. And I tell people all the time, you know, what we need to figure out is how we're going to handle this, you know, 6 weeks or 6 months when this thing breaks. Are we going to throw rocks at each other? Or are we going to say, okay, let's have a kumbaya moment and bail the boat out, right, together? So I think that, you know, the first way I go about that is asking those five questions, right? Have you recognized the problem? Recognize it's a big problem. Try to solve the problem yourself. Solve the problem yourself is really, really important, because that means they've recognized it's a big enough problem that it should be solved, right? And so that's who you're, to me, that's just, when I hear that, man, I salivate a little bit. I'm like, okay, you know, now we can start talking about the journey. The interesting thing I mentioned earlier is oftentimes, when you're coming from whiteboard ideation to the first few customers, the super innovators, the people you're engaging with are not necessarily check writers within an organization, right? Mm-hmm. Some of them don't even know how to drive. They've never bought anything for the company. They don't know how to drive a transaction. And this is very, I've never heard anybody do this before, but I found it very useful to take and at some point say, okay, Joe or Jane, we're going to have a 30-minute conversation on sales processes, and I'm going to lay out our sales process to you, and then I'm going to ask you to lay out your buying process to me, and we're going to overlay those two, and we're going to marry those two. And then what ends up happening is now you've got them engaged with their fingerprints on their buying process. And so 4 months later, or 4 weeks later, when, you know, proof of concept was supposed to be shown to an executive VP as part of their buying process, when that's not happening, you can say, hey, we're kind of stepping off the plan. We're headed towards the goal, but we're stepping off. We're missing a milestone. How do we step back in here and get this? And you're working together to get this thing done. And so I think that's really important. There's a little bit to me, and this is the part that I enjoy most, right? So when I used to go lecture at Rice University, the students would raise their hand, and I can promise you, I knew the first question every time I ever went to speak there. And that is, what books can I read to help me? And I would tell them immediately, read Joseph Campbell's Power of Myth, read Malcolm Gladwell's Tipping Point, and read every psychology book you can get your hands on, right? Because that's what we're doing, is we're dealing with human beings. We're trying to help people make decisions. That's all we do in sales. Just help them make decisions. Decisions are hard for people. We hope that it's a decision that's in our favor. But frankly, when you're looking at it, trying to move ahead in the kill it or close it kind of conversation, you just want them to make a decision. A no, give them a hug. I'll see you in a year or two. You're not wasting any more of my time. I love you for that. Where's my super innovator or innovator? So the question you asked, I don't know if I've gotten really to kind of meet around the straw person on that, is, you know, once they've answered those five questions, then I always felt like ROI and business value is the only way to go. I came from a world where I was inducted into technology and some super, super science, geophysics and petrophysics, and I knew nothing about any of that stuff. So I couldn't go toe-to-toe with those mavens and those PhDs that were my super innovators. So what do? Right? You go to business value. So for me, it was all around ROI. So then you start digging into what are the costs of not doing this? Why did you try to solve this problem before, right? What pain points? Who's feeling those pain points? It's a great question to always ask somewhere in that get to know you session. Who's going to write a check to solve this problem, right? Does anybody care about this other than you, Jane? Right. And you have to ask all of these questions around the company. One of the things I joke about is, if a tree falls in the forest, does anybody care? Right. Are we solving a problem nobody cares about in this company? Who cares? Who's going to carry this thing across the end zone and write the check? So it's a lot of that empathy thing. And I counsel, I love to use the word empathy because it's what it is. I always tell people, put on your empathy shoes, get in their world. You've got to protect them, right? They're usually not rocket butts within the company. They're usually people who are highly valued, but they're in a role that they're probably going to stay in that role for a while because nobody else can do it as good as them. So how do we make them a hero from 8 to 5 and then get this solution into the company and grow it around and guarantee all the way through that we're going to have each other's back when we stumble, because we're going to stumble.
Do you want to differentiate yourself in your marketplace? Do you want to learn how to tell your story and develop audio and visual content that can be shared across platforms? Then join us for the 30-day podcast challenge. This is 15 videos over 30 days designed to help you not only develop a podcast, but a content strategy. Start when you want, and you have access to the materials for an entire year. Come find us at www.30daypodcastchallenge.com. And don't forget to use the code LAUNCH for your special discount. And I love the word that you used was hero. And I was going to get to that. I love the word that you use is hero, because you're right. There are multiple people within organizations that need to be consulted, that need to be, talked to, need to be, feel they know, like, and trust you before this process is going to go forward. And you need to be able to communicate to different people differently. I agree with you 100%. When I'm dealing with my first contact within the company, my goal is to make them look good to their boss. Plain and simple. If it's a great idea, that's it. It was yours. If it was a bad idea, guess what? It was mine.
Yeah.
And you sit there and you want to protect them as you're bringing this process forward, because if you can give them the tools that they need to succeed, they can champion this. But this thing will die on the grapevine very quickly. But you also brought up another thing, and then I'll let you go with this, is that the fact is being able to speak to different levels in their own language and be able to allow people to have their own set of comfort based on where they are. It's like your propeller heads, your technical guys, your mavens need a different level of communication than does the CEO, does the person who is your champion of your solution.
Ben, when I respond to this, please don't let me forget the maven conversation, because this is, I think, a stroke of really high importance and somewhat brilliance.
I promise. I'll come back to mavens.
Yeah. I've gleaned from someone else and I've used it as a rule. So one of the things that I love about the innovator sector is it's a place where individual acts of heroism carry the day. Individual acts of individual acts of heroism don't carry the day for Prudential and American Express and Facebook. They do carry the day in an early stage company, and they do carry the day when it's the customer that's pulling off an individual act of heroism. Now, interestingly enough, one of the things that I found really important is when I spoke earlier about going on the journey. So that point of contact, that person that's carrying the torch for me over at another company, there was a brilliant, beautiful cat I worked with at Whirlpool, believe it or not, 1,000 years ago. And we blew something up. Software just didn't work. And he got egg on his face, and he kind of trashed us to his management to save his skin. And I came back to him later and I said, that's a path to go. But here's the problem with that path. We're going to need something else from your company at some point. And I don't need your management thinking we're dogs and not able to deliver. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to make you a hero in my company, and you're going to make me a hero in your company, because when I need something from my company, I want them to love Whirlpool as a customer. I want Whirlpool to be their favorite customer, and I want to be your favorite vendor. And by the way, so this is a tiny segue. One of the things I always do when I'm dealing with a customer that's going to be a customer for a while is I get to their procurement people. who are going to pay us the right checks. These are the people I really love. And I say to them, I want you to tell me, you don't have to say who it is, but I want you to explain to me who your favorite vendor is. You personally, Jane, who manage paying vendors, I want to know who your favorite vendor is, because my goal is to become your favorite vendor. And that means that I get paid first, or that means that when something gets stuck, you give us the attention.
But it's also, why are they your favorite vendor?
I need to earn it. Yeah. And so the question is, what do I need to do? And this has happened more than a few times. And the lady actually was named Jane that I did this with first. And I actually sent our contracts director over and said, take her to lunch, get her on a whiteboard, get her to show you documents, copy everything that she'll allow you to. And we're going to be her favorite customer. And I remember years later, not years, a year or two later, someone from accounting in my company come in and say, hey, this company X is late on $250,000 payment. Will you call them? I was like, I'm going to tell you something. If they're late on $250,000 payment, there's an error in our invoicing process, because Jane will pay. So you go fix that and come back to me. And sure enough, it was that way. So that's
and you probably got paid within 10 days at that point. Yeah.
Just remember who pays you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So to the Maven thing, this is just, to me, this is so brilliant. This is not mine. So one of my beautiful friends out of Austin is a gentleman by the name of Bijoy Goswami. And I had the pleasure of working with Bijoy at Trilogy Software 1,000 years ago and met him on the first day, actually. And a handful of years ago, Bijoy got in touch with Malcolm Gladwell and said, hey, your Maven's Connectors salespeople is a brilliant, brilliant chapter in Tipping Point, but that's a whole book in and of itself. You should take that and run with it. And here's some ideas. I'm just so excited. And Gladwell said to Bijoy, I'm done with that book. I've moved on. And I don't even own, I don't even own the rights to that thing or whatever, And so if you think there's something there, man, go do it. So Bijoy did. He wrote a book called The Human Fabric. And my favorite chapter of The Human Fabric is Break the Golden Rule. And what Bijoy says is, don't treat people the way you want to be treated. Treat people the way they want to be treated. We know enough now about psychology. We know enough now about different personality types that we don't treat everyone the way I want to be treated. Perfect example. I have two children. My daughter bursts through the door with a hug, and my son will lean in and give you his hug. And then he's done and he does that for me. He doesn't do it for him. My daughter is soaking up that hug. Perfect, different personality types. She's a raving evangelist, actress, and he is a die-hard maven. So according to Bijoy, go treat people the way they want to be treated. So when you want to communicate with a maven, when you want to communicate with an evangelist or a connector, know who you're talking to. And it's not that hard to know who you're talking to. Sometimes the role itself. I worked with geophysicists and petrophysicists for a long time. Never met a geophysicist that wasn't a pure maven, because that's the energy that personality type. Engineering often as well, right? Software development often as well. So know who you're talking to across the room and deliver this respect they want in the way they want it, not necessarily in the way you want. So thanks for allowing me that. It's a brilliant thing Bijoy wrote.
And I love that, because the key thing is, what I took away from that is having the conversations to find out from people, what are the things that are important to you? I mean, I do that all the time when I'm talking to procurement departments, when I'm talking to clients, when I'm talking to whatever. It's what are the key things that are going to influence your buying decision? What are the things that are going to make you happy? What are the things that are going to allow you to achieve your goals? By the way, first of all, what are your goals?
Yeah.
Are your goals? And how can we work together to be able to achieve them? Because for me, when I walk into a customer and I understand what their goals are, I understand their motivations, I understand the purpose of the company, I understand the personalities of the different people within the company, working with them is easy. You're just walking in trying to sell somebody something, it's an us versus them.
And
what I want to find out is, when we're selling to innovators, when we're trying to get those first customers, where is the best place to start? Because too many people go for the head of the dragon. They go to the CEO. They go to the CIO. They go to the whatever the C-suite designation that they think is the person that's going to write the check. That's the person that they're going to. I think it's the wrong decision, but I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, it is absolutely, because generally when we're selling it in the innovator, when we're selling an innovative solution at the executive level, they may not even know the problems exist, right? And that's for a lot of different reasons. And one of them is because people don't want them to know the problems exist. Another one is they're not measured on that problem, right? And they're not measured on that resolution of that problem. They're not feeling that pain personally or professionally. So there's a couple things there. So one of the things, and I know in my book, I talk about, one of the things you want to find out as soon as you can when you engage with someone and you've qualified them as a super innovator or an innovator, depending upon where you are in your journey as a company and selling your solution, is what are their personal goals and what are their professional goals, right? And so those things are very, very important. And for me, it was always kind of, you know, how do you get a gold star? How does your boss get a gold star? And how does their boss get a gold star? And so I want to know those things because I want to be able to address those. And by the way, if what I'm here to talk about doesn't put a gold star on your page, your boss's page, or their boss's page, then we need to hug each other and you need to tell me who cares about this. Tree falls in the forest, find me somebody who cares, right? And so one of my favorite things is, a story's way too long. I had the great fortune of becoming friends with the CEO of a huge multinational customer. And it really was by saying yes to everything, which is one of my kind of mottos. I tell everyone, say yes to everything, because you don't get over prescribed or subscribed, because people half the time don't show up to the second meeting anyway. So it drops off. So say yes to everything. And I actually, there was a guy who was in, had just moved from Alaska to Calgary, and his family wasn't there. And I was in town for a business meeting with him. And he'd mentioned that all he's doing is playing with commercial models at night because his kids are back in Alaska and they're not moving for 6 months. And I was like, well, let's go to dinner. So we went to dinner and we hit it off great. And so then I made like 4 trips immediately after that. And we had dinner for the next, you know, every other week for several weeks, because, you know, I'm not that intriguing, but sitting at home in an apartment alone is
it's lonely.
I'm at least that intriguing, right? So we hit it off, became pretty good friends. And I remember joking with him about the old, I kind of call it the old, you know, Big Four consulting company. And you and I are old enough to remember what Big Four consulting companies, but it's kind of the, you know, they would walk in and say, give me your biggest problem, right? Tell me your biggest problem. And I told this guy one day, I was like, look, you're one of the smartest guys I know. I don't want your biggest problem. I'm pretty sure if you can't figure it out, I'm not smart enough to figure it out with my team. Give me number 6. It's still important to you. It's still a problem. You want it resolved. As soon as we resolve number 6, we'll look at number 5, maybe, or number 7. So give me some of your top 10s. Let's talk about those. But 1, 2, and 3, those are billion-dollar problems that I'm not going to affect because they're bigger than me. And so it's kind of, again, you know, if you think about what's happening at sea level, these aren't the kind of problems that they're looking at. And they're really looking at stakeholder value. They're looking at M&A, right? They're looking at things that aren't necessarily causing a problem because the security gates are not being monitored properly by the security cameras, right? That's not something they're looking at.
But what's interesting is, by looking at question number 6 or number 5 or number 12 or whatever it is, you're earning the right to talk about problems 1, 2, and 3. If you just go in and sit there and say, I can fix your billion-dollar problem. Well, how? You're a small little startup company. You have no proof of concept. You have no infrastructure. You have no capitalization. There's a million things you don't have. You don't have what it takes. You may have a good idea, but can I trust you to do it?
But you absolutely can't. I can't scale to it either.
Right? No, and I can't scale to it. Maybe I can scale to it in 3 to 5 years, but certainly not at this stage of the game. You are far better off as an innovator, as an early adopter, looking at that problem number 6 and doing that well and say, hey, listen, we did number 6 for you well. Can we tackle number 5? Yeah. Did number 5. Now let's tackle number 4. Okay, we've built up some expertise in this area. Maybe we can we come in and do some consulting for you on your 1, 2, or 3 problem? We can't solve it for you, but at least we can look at this particular area of it.
Yeah.
And companies need to sit there and realize what stage they're in, you know, and not always trying to chop down that, you know, great oak in the center of the meadow with a tiny little hatchet.
No, so a huge statement. I hope early stage companies listen to that statement. You know, I talk about a lot with frequency, and in the book, I talk about, you know, the Oracle of Delphi and know thyself. You need to know where you fit into the conversation. If you ever watch the Shark Tank television show, you'll hear someone say, who has a whopping $10,000 in monthly revenue, say to the shark, oh, you're going to regret not investing in my company. It's like, no, you don't know where you fit in this conversation, right? In the power dynamic.
And so, you don't even know what you don't know at that stage.
Yeah, boy, and yeah, you're not endearing yourself to anyone. Do you know who I am? So going back to something that we touched on that I think is just of paramount importance in this conversation, and that is, I talked about the nuances and the personality types that exist at the super innovator and innovator stage, right? So when we're going from those kind of 50 customers or less, right? And so one of the things that you don't often find, I said they didn't always know their buying process, didn't even know they had a buying process even. I think oftentimes they're interested to learn that, oh my God, sales sales is a process. I thought you took people to play golf and that was it, right? Took them to lunch and they bought. And it's like, it's an actual process with a goal, and milestones, and dependencies. I think that it's really, really important to take them by the hand and walk them through kind of the value proposition. And I mean, literally in a session, walk through your value proposition. And there's two statements around a value prop that I think are critical, and I'll speak to them in a minute. But I think the other aspect is you have to get them to start giving you their best guesses on cost or not solving the problem, right? So the ROI. And because that's what you start building your case on, to allow them, right? I said earlier, all we do is we're trying to help people make decisions, and we're helping them build the case to make a decision to pull the trigger on putting some of this gunky solution in place, not ready for primetime solution, to help build it to a real solution. And so around the value prop statements, again, I oversimplify things. I tend to do rules of three or rules of five. And one of my rules of five around value props are, and every marketing person goes this part, the good ones go a step further. Every marketing person can say, our value prop is, what's the problem? What's the cost of the problem? What's the solution? What's the value of the solution? And how are we unique? Pretty simple five statement value prop. On that two and four, which is cost of the problem to the customer and value of the solution to the customer, not too many early stage companies can append in real dollars. So what's the cost of the problem in real dollars, and what's the value of the solution in real dollars? And that's when you start digging at your ROI. And I always tell people, and it's interesting because when I'm working with mavens as founders on technology companies, so they come from the technology side, not the sales marketing side. They'll say, well, I don't know that exact number. I'm like, I don't need the exact number. I need a number that allows me to sit at the table and get into a constructive argument, right? If I say it's 10 million and the prospective customer pushes back and said over here it's 7 million and I'm charging 100,000, I'm okay with 7 million, right? Give me 7 million. Let's run with that. Now, where does that 7 million? So then you start unpacking those two, right? Cost of and value of, in terms of real dollars. And that's how you start helping these people that you find in the innovator sector to get to a point of decision to buy.
So I got two questions for you, and then I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
And the first question is, what's the one piece of advice you would give a founder who's just starting out and looking for their first innovator to go out and pitch their product to?
Get a day job. It's gonna take you longer than you think. The check is going to be smaller than you expect. And your partner at home is going to tell you, Deloitte's called three times with a job with benefits. Why are we still chasing this dream? And so, and that's actually not in jest, right? That is, make sure you've got enough squirreled away, or you have some way to sell a part of your life, right? If you're building an accounting solution, you're probably good at accounting. Sell some accounting service work to cash flow this thing as you go, so that you're not panicked down the road or you abandon. Because most of these startups we see people abandon because they just ran out of cash to back them. But so then the next statement I would make is around your value, know your value proposition. Those five statements I think are really pretty tight. And so answer those five questions. What's the problem? What's the cost of the problem in real dollars? What's the solution? What's the value of the solution in real dollars? And how am I unique? How am I different? If you can answer those five, then you should be able to sit at the table and talk to those folks. And then kind of finally, I say, do anything you can do that's moral and ethical and legal to get a customer that's paying. If they say, you come over on Sundays and wash my car, then go over on Sundays and wash her. Pay that first pay, nobody wants to be first. Nobody wants to be second or third, but nobody wants to be first. And you can't get to two and three and five without one. So do whatever it takes to get that first deal or two in, and then ask the world of them, right? Ask them for a lot of things as you start to help them out. So
I love it. Patrick, this has been an incredible conversation. I'll make sure that links to everything are in the show notes, and, you know, where people can buy your book, where people can get a hold of you, all that kind of fun stuff. But this is the question I ask everybody as I let them out the door. When you leave a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
So, great question. I hope I plant that seed with the last question that I ask in every meeting I've been in for the past 10 years. And that is, what else can I do for you today? And what I want those people to think is, that guy's selling to me. That guy wants to do a transaction with us, but that guy actually is showing up and trying to help us. And that's called trust, right? And that's what I want, is them to trust me. I don't think people buy from people they like. I think people buy from people they trust. And I think we earn trust by showing up, listening, and helping solve problems, begging forgiveness when we stumble.
I love it. Patrick, this has been a great conversation. There's lots of gold in there.
So two things, Ben. One is, as I was talking, I was thinking, I don't think there's anything that I've mentioned that I haven't written down in that sales book. So that's kind of exciting, because again, I think we've got some things of value to offer folks. And before I turn you loose, I have to ask the question, what else can I do for you today?
Well, you know what? You and I can have a conversation about that off air. But you know what I am looking at right now is my new course. It's called 30daypodcastchallenge.com. And it's all about teaching people how to create and run a podcast successfully. So I'm teaching people how to innovate.
I think that fifth question of the value prop, how are you different, is key to that.
Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah, I'd like to learn more about that.
Well, we'll definitely talk about it off air. Patrick, thank you very much. Yeah. Thanks for being such an incredible person. And we will talk soon.
All right, Ben. Thanks a bunch, man. I appreciate you making time.
Cheers.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at YourBrandMarketing.com. That's www.YourBrandMarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?